I came across a picture this week that I don't know if, Austin, did you get this picture of people in Japan? There it is. Okay. I wanted to show you this picture. And there's an article. I want to read you a portion of the article that goes with this picture. So in most countries, sleeping at work is not only embarrassing, it might even cost one's job. But in Japan, sleeping in the office is common and is socially accepted. In fact, it's often seen as a sign of diligence, as in the person is so dedicated to their job that they worked themselves to exhaustion. And I also kind of want to know what this is right here. I don't know what this little symbol means. Like, I noticed that as well. Like, what does that mean? No, what is that, groveling? No crawling? I don't know. Anyway, that's unrelated to what I wanted to share with you about the picture. But let's leave this picture up for a moment. And it's not untrue. It says Japan is one of the most sleep-deprived nation in the world. One study suggests that an average Japanese person sleeps only 6 hours and 35 minutes each night. Hence, most fall asleep during their commute or at work, in parks, in coffee shops, in bookstores, in shopping malls, in any other public place. It's so widespread and so normal that the Japanese have a word for it, inemuri, which means present while sleeping. Nobody knows inemuri better than this doctor, this scholar from the University of Cambridge who studies Japanese culture, and she says this: I first encountered these intriguing attitudes to sleep during my first stay in Japan in the late 1980s, she wrote in an article on the BBC website. At this time, Japan was at the peak of what became known as the bubble economy, a phase of extraordinary speculative boom. Daily life was correspondingly hectic. People filled their schedules with work and leisure appointments and hardly had any time to sleep. And it was during this period of post-war economic boom that the nation gained the reputation of a hardworking nation with no time to sleep. People worked long hours and then napped during the notoriously long commute back home. Students stayed up late cramming and then dozed off during classes the next morning. And it seems contradictory, but the tolerance for falling asleep during meetings, classes, and social gatherings is widespread in Japanese culture. But there are rules. Like, it depends who you are, she says. If you're new in the company and have to show how actively you are involved, you cannot sleep. But if you're 40 or 50 years old and it's not directly your main topic in a meeting, for example, you can sleep. The higher up the social ladder you are, the more you can sleep. Another clue to deciphering the complicated etiquettes of inemuri lies in the term itself, to be present while sleeping. So even though the sleeper might be mentally away, they have to be able to return to the social situation at hand when active contribution is required. It says your body needs to pretend that you're active in a meeting, like you're concentrating, so you can't sleep under the table or anything. You have to sit as if you were listening intently and just put your head down. See Exhibit A here. Now, I want to caution us, like sometimes as Americans, I think that's the almost everybody in the room, from the American culture, we look at other cultures sometimes and we can be pretty dismissive of that, and we go like, oh, we're quick to make decisions about why our culture is better than other cultures, and I want to caution you from doing that, but I do have some questions about this picture. Like, it's just an interesting dynamic that it's become, they're known for working so hard that it's been built into the culture that it's okay to sleep. You work yourself to exhaustion, you put your head down on the desk and nap. But one of the questions I have is, or one of the things I have to say about that is, that does not look very comfortable, does it, right? And I know that because I definitely slept a few times like that in high school. That was definitely, and some of you can identify with that as well, right? That's not a very comfortable way to sleep. You're probably better off sleeping at home. But this picture and this article that I came across this week really raises this dynamic for me of thinking about work and rest, and the balance and the rhythm between work and rest. We're in this series right now where we're talking about the Sabbath. It's a series called 24-6. The subtitle is The Rest of God. And I want to let you know kind of where we started last week. We started out by saying that something is wrong with the pace of life in our culture. It is 24-7. It is constantly going. It is constantly moving. And it's moving in a detrimental effect in many ways to our souls and to our lives and to the ability to take a break every now and then and to rest. And there's this dynamic that's really out of control. The pace is relentless in our culture. And a lot of people have noticed that. We've talked about some of these subcultures in the last couple of weeks, the idea of someone dropping out from that, and they're saying, this is out of control, the consumeristic and the pace of everything and the work. And there are people that are building tiny little homes now, right? The tiny house movement. There's minimalism that's becoming a larger and larger factor in our culture where people are just getting rid of a lot of those things so they don't have to put as much money or resources into caring for the things they own or buying more things. I mentioned something last week called the FIRE movement, which was from a New York Times article, which stands for Financial Independence, Retire Early. And people in the FIRE movement work high-paying jobs, but they save all that money, or the majority of that money, and they try to retire as quickly as possible. And there's, you know, all of these kind of factors in our culture are pointing at the fact that, man, things are very fast, and people are dealing with it in different ways, and there's something wrong with the balance and this rhythm between work and rest. And there seems to be a very unhealthy culture, unhealthy relationship between work and rest. And it is, again, can be detrimental to us. And we all need margin, right? A piece of paper needs margins on it. It needs space and white space. And we need margin in our life as well. And just like we need blank space in a photograph or a painting, we need blank space in our lives as well. We said there's a very old concept from the scriptures, this concept of Sabbath and taking a break and really withdrawing and resting and taking intentional time to restore ourselves and to rest. And we need that concept, I feel like, more than at any other time. This idea of you don't necessarily have to drop out of society and to totally move away to have a more healthy pace than our culture has, but it does take effort. And I think the effort that it takes is something called Sabbath. And so we're talking about this principle of Sabbath. And we started out last week by saying we are not created to run at a 24/7 pace. We are not created to operate that way. And when the concept of Sabbath is introduced in the Bible in the very beginning, it's introduced as these days of creation. And on the seventh day, God rested. And he built rest itself into our how we are created, how we are designed. We also said that when God gave the gift of the Sabbath to his people Israel in the desert, it was this beautiful gift because slaves do not get days off. So for Israel, this meant incredible freedom, that they got to have one day out of seven where they didn't have to work and they could rest and they could renew themselves and they could be restored. We said sometimes we feel enslaved to something and we operate as if we are slaves when in fact we are free. And we can be enslaved to our own drive. We can be enslaved to the expectations of people around us. We can be enslaved to the financial things, activities, things that are going on around us. These forces can make us feel like slaves sometimes. But we, as a declaration of freedom, it's important to rest and to take a day and to rest. And the Sabbath is a day given to rest, renewal, and relationship with God and others. And so for 3 weeks, last week, this week, and next week, we're encouraging you to embrace this rhythm of 24/6. Find time in your schedule to take a break. And maybe that's over a couple of days, maybe that's 2 12-hour periods, but try to find a way to embrace the 24/6 way of life. This might involve creativity on your part, thinking through how to do this. But I encourage you to try to embrace this rhythm of work and rest. Today we're going to be in Exodus chapter 34, verse 21. It says this, 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall rest. In plowing time and in harvest you shall rest. Now, we can be out of balance. There's some fill-in-the-blanks if you have your program there. There's some fill-in-the-blanks for you to follow along. We can be out of balance with our work in one of two ways. There's not working enough is the first one, and then not resting enough is the second way that we can be out of balance with our work. See, there's actually the first 5 words of that verse, right? 6 days you shall work. That's an important part of this command for the people of Israel. 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall rest. So this concept of actually being productive, we got to talk about the context of this again. We talked about this last week, but to recap, this is pretty important. The children of Israel were in the desert. They were brought into the wilderness, brought away from slavery in Egypt. And the slavery, they were in Egypt for 400 years. And for a lot of that time, they were slaves. And you have to put yourself in their place for a moment and think about the depth of what that does to your psyche and what that does to your heart to be a slave for generation after generation after generation after generation. And now in this triumphant work of God, brought out of slavery and given freedom, and now you're in all the kind of moment of celebration has worn off, and now you find yourself surrounded by thousands of your countrymen out in the wilderness trying to figure out, now what? What's next? And God is with them as a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, and God is working on their behalf and providing for them in the wilderness and giving them manna to eat when there's no other food. God's miraculously providing food for them. But God is teaching them how society is going to work for them now. Here's how you will live as my people. And this is an important moment for them because he's speaking to people who bear the scars of slavery and the brutal nature of like a life where they were not able, they had no freedom, they couldn't call any shots. They lived in this brutal way of life where they were viewed as such a threat that Pharaoh was trying to wipe out a generation of their children because he thought they were multiplying and they were like a pest to be exterminated and all of this darkness that they had dealt with, and now they were given freedom, but they don't know how to live now. What that does to you to be slaves for so long is a difficult challenge to overcome. Slaves, again, don't get days off. Slaves don't get to lead themselves. And so now they're trying to figure out what life is going to be like now. And God is so gracious to give them his law, to say, this is what life will be like, and to give them a rhythm at which to live their lives, that now you can have freedom, and there's these festivals that will kind of form your year, and there's this, on a smaller scale, this rhythm of this 6 days you shall work, and one day you shall rest, and God has given them this new pattern and this new way of living. But a part of that, that break is an incredible thing, but also 6 days you shall work. We actually need to work. And it's actually a problem in our culture and in some people's lives where they either don't have employment, or you do have employment, but you're totally disengaged from your work. Kind of go in, clock in. Now it's on an app probably or on a screen. But you clock in, you do your time, and then you leave, and you're not engaged. And you're at work, but you're not really working. You're not really putting your heart into it. And the Bible has a very positive view of work. If you look back at the very beginning of Genesis 1, you see where God has given humanity work to do, right? Adam gets to name animals. There's the garden that he gets to care for. Work is, we sometimes think, I remember thinking that work was a part of the fall. Like the reason why people have to go to work and earn money is because this world is broken and sinful and it shouldn't be like that, but that's the way it is. Listen, that's not true. Like there are elements of work. You see the way work is transformed by the fall. There's elements of work that become toil and not pleasant. But work itself is actually deeply human. There's something that's a gift of work, to actually do something, to create something, to build something, to cultivate something, that we actually need that. That's a part of how we are designed. 6 days you shall work. In the book of Proverbs, there's this character that is talked about a number of times called the sluggard. And the problem with the sluggard is that he rejects the concept of work. He's not about to work. And there's sort of comic examples of this in Proverbs. I just looked up a few verses where the sluggard is mentioned. And the sluggard exaggerates. The sluggard's constantly looking for ways to get out of work. He's constantly trying to take a break and not do stuff. And it eventually catches up with them. There's some kind of sobering verses about it. Like Proverbs 6:6, go to the ant, O sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. Proverbs 6:9, how long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? It says, the way of a sluggard is like a hedge of thorns, but the path of the upright is a level highway. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish and will not even bring it back to his mouth. So the sluggard's like the Homer Simpson of the book of Proverbs. You know, he's like, puts the hand in the food, too tired to bring it back. Just sluggard does not plow in the autumn. He will seek at harvest and have nothing. The sluggard says, there is a lion outside. I shall be killed in the streets, right? It's this kind of comic character of someone mentioned in the Bible as the sluggard, this concept of someone that is always looking for ways to get out of work, and we see that it catches up with them. Pass by the field of a sluggard, by the vineyard of a man lacking sense in Proverbs 24, and the wall around the house is crumbled down and the fields are in disrepair. And we're told that work is something that is actually important to humanity. This is something that we need. There's something deeply important about the idea of working. Colossians 3, 23 to 24 says, "Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ." I remember when I was a kid asking my parents, like, "I wish every day could be vacation. Every day should be summer. Why can't every day be summer vacation? Why can't every day be just a day off where we just relax and do nothing?" And I know that, like, the answer to the question, couldn't every day be a vacation? The answer to that question is no, it couldn't. Because at some point it shifts. We go from being actually resting and enjoying the benefit of a day off to now just being in straight leisure mode all the time. And that's actually not very restful. We need work to really know what rest is. You don't rest the same. If you've never done a hard day's work, you don't actually know what it means to really enjoy rest. There's this rhythm between work and rest. Real rest goes hand in hand with work. There's an author, Andy Crouch, who talks about when our relationship with work is out of balance, then our rest simply becomes leisure. And rather by going real into depth with that, I want to show you a philosophical clip from a movie that's a very deep philosophical dive on this concept of leisure versus real rest and work and what it looks like when your life is out of balance between rest and work. And it's a little, it might be over some of your heads. I hope you can rise up to the occasion of it. It's from a Pixar movie called WALL-E. And it won't be over your heads. I enjoy this clip, but I think it illustrates what I'm talking about being out of balance with work and what that does to humanity when we're a little out of balance between this idea of rest and our rest simply becomes leisure and we don't know what it means to work anymore. Let's take a look. All right, there you go. So that's an example of what it looks like to be out of balance with our leisure and rest. Like when we're out of balance with rest, it just becomes leisure and it's not something we actually enjoy. It doesn't become restful anymore when we don't have anything meaningful to do with our time, when we're not able to produce things or to work. Our soul actually needs work. And for some people, that might require creativity. When you think about what you might do as your work, if you're retired, if you're on disability, if you are a student, right? You're in school, like maybe that's a little bit easier. Your school is your work, right? But I think for many people, this might require some level of creativity to think through, what am I going to do that is producing something that is working? It's actually deeply a deeply human need to work, to do something, to produce something with our time. I mentioned that FIRE movement that I talked about from the New York Times article, and one of the things that was interesting about that was they profiled several people who had worked very hard and worked at stressful jobs and made a lot of money and saved a ton of money and then had retired. They had done what they had wanted to do, financial independence, retire early. People had worked six-figure income-type jobs and worked very hard, and now they were there. They were 45 years old and retired, living the retiree lifestyle at 45 years old. And one of the things I noticed in that article was it seemed that they thought they would be happier than they were. They were trying to find ways of coming up with filling all of their time. Now what am I going to do with all this time and all this life I have? What am I going to do with that? And so they were replacing all this free time with actually things that were work-like, volunteering on committees or working on projects, doing a lot of building, you know, building stuff and because people need that. Again, Andy Crouch mentions this concept of rest becoming leisure, but he says when we're out of balance with our work becomes toil. Because that's the second way you can be out of balance with your work, is by not resting enough. When you see God enjoying his labor in the book of Genesis, where he creates this, you know, in creation, day one, he creates this, day two, he creates this, day three, day four. And then after every day, he says, it's good, and it's good, and it's good, and it's good. But on day seven, he rested, and do you know what he said other than good? He said, this day is holy. This day is holy. This is a holy day. This day is set apart. This day actually reveals something about the character of God. You know, and we know that concept of holy day. In fact, we say it all the time, but we don't pronounce it that same way. We say holiday. But the etymology of that word is the same way. It's this idea of a day that is set aside. So Labor Day, we just celebrated a holiday that was a day set aside to not working. And that concept is something that is important. We need to be able to rest and to take breaks from our rest. So the rest of the sermon, we're going to be talking about being out of balance with our work when it comes to not resting enough. And I'm going to change up a little bit of this concept and use kind of a different metaphor other than balance here in this next point. Next fill in the blank is that we should strive for a work-rest rhythm more than a balance. See, there's this concept of the 6 days of work that is a rhythm, and then there's one day of rest. If you have 6 days that are devoted to productivity, whether that's at home or whether that's in school or whatever it might be, whatever your work is at this point in your life, if you have 6 days of work and then one day of rest, that is a rhythm more than it's a balance. And here's why that's important. We got to go back to that verse that we just read, Exodus 34, verse 21. 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall rest. What's the rest of the verse? In plowing time and in harvest you shall rest. There are times in life where we will be way off balance, but we can still have a healthy rhythm. There are times like harvest time and plowing time. In an agricultural society, that's busy time, right? You are getting the fields ready for planting, or you are ready to harvest those fields. And that is everyone get to work, we're going to work long hours. There's this time where that is a very, very busy season, and that's okay. But that would be the most natural question. We still rest, right? What do you do in those really busy times? Maybe that's the day you just never stop. You keep going because it's a busy, busy time. No, God tells them, even during harvest time, even during plowing time, you shall rest. See, we need to change our view of rest sometimes. Resting is not slacking. Resting is not being lazy. So for some of you may be out of balance with work when it comes to really not working. Some of you, I think more of you, are off balance when it comes to not resting. And we can think sometimes that we always have to be producing, we always have to be working, we can never let our guard down, we can never take a break because that'll be lazy or whatever. Maybe we've got such great work ethics that we don't know how to take a break. And resting is not actually lazy. I was listening to an interview with somebody on a podcast, and they were talking about the productivity hack. You ever heard this term, productivity hack? We work really hard in our culture at being the most productive possible. And there are little tips and techniques to be even more productivity or more productive and squeeze even more effort and accomplishment out of our limited amount of time. And so we have productivity hacks. You know, it's like, this is an app that will help you get your stuff done. Download this app. It's a productivity hack. Or, do this kind of work first and then this kind of work later that doesn't require as much, you know, do your creative work later in the day and your detail work first thing in the day. That's a productivity hack, or that may not be a real one. Don't take that advice. I don't know if that's a real productivity hack or not. But someone sold this productivity hack, and it was like, here's an idea for some of you that are working very hard to get a little bit more work out of your day and out of your week. Here's an idea. Take one day off per week where you don't work at all. They're like, that's a really great productivity hack. You'll actually probably get more done those other 6 days than you would have done on those 7 days. And I'm like, that's so funny, like someone introducing that like it's a new idea. This one's been around for a while. And I think just that idea that we need to sell taking a break as a productivity hack might be an indication that our relationship between work and rest might be out of balance, might be out of rhythm, right? It might be messed up a little bit. And here's the reality of that. I think that if you never have a break coming, if you can never see a break on the horizon where you can really take a breath and relax and recharge, you probably will not work as hard as you would have if you knew you had a break coming. Because you dial it back a little bit. You almost can't even help it. If you're always working and never stopping, you find your body will force you to take little breaks sometimes. You might get sick, and your body says, you're taking a break today, right? You will find ways, or even just to dial it back a little bit at work, where you won't maybe give it your best effort because you know that you can't maintain this pace somewhere in your mind, and so you kind of slow down just a little bit. And so if you think about this idea, you know how this works when it comes to vacation. You got a vacation coming up, and you know how hard you work to get ready for those days off. You're like, I know that I will be gone for the next week or the next 2 weeks, and so there are things that I have to get done, and you somehow miraculously produce far more work in preparation for that vacation than you would on a normal week. And I think that's the concept with this harvest and planting. That's the genius of it. You shall, 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall rest in plowing time, and in harvest you shall rest. I guarantee you on those 6 days of harvest that they got more work done and brought more of the crop in, or on the plowing, that they produced a lot more than they would have because they knew they had that break coming. And even if it wasn't done, this brings us to our final point. Resting is an act of faith. Resting is an act of faith. It takes faith to be, I'm sure for these people, to be in the middle of harvest, and they have worked long days, and now they're at this point where it is the Sabbath starts at sundown, right? It's Friday for the Jewish people. Friday, the sun is setting. They know that they have to stop the harvest, and like, what's going to happen with the crops that we did not bring in? It was an act of faith for them to trust God that the harvest would be fine while they rested. A lot of times the reason why we never rest is because we feel like we have to bear the burdens of everything. We actually are afraid of stopping. What might happen if we take a real break? We fear the consequences of stopping, but that's where we grow in our faith. We say, God is actually the one who's got the whole world in his hands, not me. So I can stop, and I can rest, and I can just be one of God's children today and not push myself and to keep going and to never, never stop. This book, 24-6, where we got the title of this series, and I just love it. It's a very simple way of describing the Sabbath. 24-6. We're opting out of 24-7. We're doing 24-6 instead. And I'm encouraging you and challenging you, but I'm not commanding you, and I'll talk more about that next week, but I'm encouraging you to see the wisdom of the Sabbath day. To what it means to rest, what it means to take a break every now and then, what it means to recharge and restore yourself. This is a deeply wise concept. The opening part of this book, 24-6, tells the story of a man named David Green. When David Green built his first craft store in 1972, his initial plan was to close his stores on Sundays so that his employees and their families, as well as his customers, could take the day off. But he got scared. A competitor vowed to drive him out of business, and one of his tactics was to operate 7 days a week. So David Green opened on Sundays to match the competition. As the years went by, his business thrived and expanded. He gave money to charity and to the church, but his conscience bothered him. With one hand, he was supporting the church, and with the other, he was working against it. For many of his employees, Sunday was the only time they could go to church or spend time with their children. And we've all heard the saying, the customer is always right. And this seems like sound business advice, and everything about David's approach to retailing honored this axiom, but something else worked on his conscience. A voice said, I come before your customers. So 2 decades after he began his business, David looked at the numbers. Hour for hour, Sunday had become his most profitable day of the week. He was selling $100 million in merchandise per year just on Sundays. David prayed, and then he took the plunge. He decided to permanently close his stores on Sundays, and that's when our business really took off, he said, of his Hobby Lobby chain. God blessed his decision. That was a fearful thing for him, but you've heard of Hobby Lobby. We have a couple of them here in Spokane. He's done pretty well for himself with that decision of taking Sundays off. But there's this fear about resting and letting our guard down and not being always on. And it's very easy to be always on in our culture. It is very easy to be always available and to never take a break. But I encourage you, I challenge you to build a rhythm of work and rest. Evaluate your habits when it comes to this work-rest rhythm. And I also want to let you know that when you start to try to protect a day out of your schedule, you will find that that is a lot of work. You will find that it takes a lot of coordination. You will find that actually when you think about what is work to you, which I encourage you to do, what is work? Because if you spend all day sitting at a desk on a computer, then that's your work. Working in a garden might not be work for you. Or building something with your hands might actually not be work. That might be something that renews you and that is restful to you. But if you spend all day doing manual labor, then sitting down on a couch is going to be more of a restful thing for you, perhaps, or taking, you know, evaluate, be thinking about that. Put some thought into this. What is work for you and what is renewing for you? What fits in that category of work? And try to have one day where you do not do that. Even housework, even preparing elaborate meals, perhaps. But one day where you prepare, where you take that time to rest and renew, you simplify as much as you can, and you put the work in to prepare for that one day of rest. Ann Voskamp said, "The busyness of your life leaves little room for the source of your life." And this really gets to the heart of what we're talking about. We need to have moments where we withdraw from that busyness and we find some stillness and reconnect with our Creator. We used the verse last week, "Be still and know that I am God," Psalm 46:10. Be still and know that He is God. And included in that is the fact that we are not God. So we can take a break. And there are certain kinds of knowing, we said, Mark Buchanan said this, certain kinds of knowing that can only come from stillness. So when we talk about the rest of God, 24-6, the rest of God, it's we're knowing things about God that we only know in those moments of stillness. Listen, I'm going to pray, and we're going to celebrate communion in just a few moments, but I want to talk about how Jesus brings these concepts together in a powerful way, and I'm going to do that after we pray. But would you pray with me? Father, I thank you for our church. I thank you for these people gathered here together today. I pray that you would teach us what it means to rest in you, what it means to find that rest and renewal that only comes when we take a moment, when we take a break, when we have this proper rhythm of work and rest, and we are balanced in our relationship to both of those things. I pray that you would help each and every person, Lord, apply these concepts in their lives in their own personal way, in a way that really brings renewal, brings encouragement to them, helps them pace themselves well, so that we can leave that time and energy for the most important things, Lord. Our relationship with you and serving you and following you and having these moments that prepare us for our time with you. And Lord, we thank you for what this time, Sunday morning, means to us when it comes to this work-life balance and this moment in our week where we rest in you and we learn together in your word and we worship you and we celebrate communion together and we recognize that we are a part of something. So Lord, I pray that you would help us to be people who live these healthy work-life rhythm lives and help us to not be so concerned about our culture's way of telling us how to do things that we burn ourselves out and we burn the candle at both ends, and we work so hard that we are just hurting ourselves. Or we want to be people who live in a healthy way, in a way that brings you honor and glory, and that when people are looking around, they see us living in ways that bring joy and encouragement and to our hearts, to our families. And so, Lord, please help us with this. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.